A great show on Wednesday, August the 7th. Brian Lockhart, reporter for the Connecticut Post, stopped by to talk about the coming election in Bridgeport and other things facing the Park City, including all the politics surrounding a possible new casino in the state. Also joining us on the show, Curtis Houck from Newsbusters.org to talk about and comment how the coverage has been of the two mass shootings that we saw a few days ago in both El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. But before we got any of this up and underway, Melissa Sheketoff's son, Chase, made his radio debut right here on Connecticut Today.
Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Okay, so whatever comes to the top of your mind, Chase, just go ahead and say it. Because nobody's going to understand it anyway, because you're too cute anyway. Oh, hi. 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 It's coming up to 8 past 2 o'clock, 208. We are here. Yes, WICC 600 on the air at WICC600.com. Like Mr. Big Voice said, it's another edition of Connecticut Today right here on WICC 600. And you know what? Melissa Sheketoff was in the building for the morning show. And your son Chase is here.
Yes.
How old is Chase?
He just turned 1 2 weeks ago.
So, folks, we're going to have Chase's radio debut right here.
He's infatuated with the microphone.
On Connecticut Today.
I know.
There he is.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, Chase. How are you? Now, there's a problem here because everybody else he's laughing with, and he sees me, and he started to like.
He knows you're a big deal.
He was a little taken aback by me. I don't know why.
He sees you in your big chair, and you're all set up with your laptop and everything. You're like a big deal, Paul.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Chase. Look at you, Chase. Say something on the radio, man. This is your debut.
Don't you want to say? He's super shy.
He is.
You want to say something? You're just going to hit the microphone.
He's going to hit the microphone, and that's it.
What do you think?
Yeah, he's playing with it. What you're hearing, folks, is Chase's cute little right hand gripping the microphone.
Exactly. Oh,
so he's sleeping through the night now?
Yeah,
everything's good?
He's a good boy. Yeah, he's a good boy, and he's such a trooper. I wasn't supposed to come in this afternoon.
Yeah, but things happen. Yeah,
things happen for the morning show, so I had to come in and pre-record something, which
very
is
nice.
Perfectly fine. But
very nice.
I didn't tell the bosses I had to run in with the kiddo, but
okay.
I was
but
like,
hey.
Listen, you know, we got Jay Michaels, we got Paul Pacelli.
That's right.
Aaron
man.
I was like, we got enough people.
Yeah, right. Right, Chase?
Right? And we already did the interview, and it was
fun. It's beautiful.
It's like I have to interview, and then I'd shut my microphone off, and I'd be like, Chase, here's a goldfish. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it looks crazy behind the scenes.
He's going for mom's phone. There he is. Yeah. So, Chase, what do you think about the state's current financial position? No?
He's undecided on it right
tolls?
Now.
Tolls? Chase, what do you think about tolls?
Say no.
No, we don't want mommy to pay more money to come to work in the morning.
He's
no,
like, mom has to pay for my diapers.
No, yes, we don't want to take diaper money out of a cute little Chase's mommy's pocket. Yes,
right?
Yes. Okay,
it's just fascinating.
It
by
is.
Right now.
It is. So you're ready for like three more?
No, we're good with one. One's great.
Just kidding.
One's a blessing. One is a blessing, and
you're not,
I give
you're not going to be like those old families that had. Oh yeah,
like
you're
my
set.
Mother who had five.
She had five.
I'm one of five.
So you're one of five.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you want that warm family atmosphere that
That's
you had?
Why
growing?
My mom gave me four siblings to give a bunch of kids. So Chase will have cousins. Gotta love cousins.
Chase
cousins
has all his cousins, huh? Look at that.
Oh,
there he is. Yeah. Where's the doggy?
See, the doggy just got back from the groomer, I tell ya.
We almost had a couple of words out of him there, but that was good, though. He's so cute.
Thank you.
You have to put a picture of him up on the website there.
I was going to say, I don't think
he'll
ever
pull on that microphone, Chase. There you go. Eddie will fix it. He's down the hall. Don't worry. Ed's in here. It's what we have the engineers for.
Oh, buddy.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having us.
He is so cute. Now, listen, my son made his debut on the radio 25 years ago. He wasn't even able to travel yet. I took the post-birth cries and put him on the radio.
Really?
Yes, that started his showbiz career. Yes.
I love it.
So he has a real career now.
So
Chase wants to go walk. There he is. Okay. Hey, Chase, don't go near the wires, buddy. Okay? We just want to make sure you don't crawl under the wires there. All right, pal?
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
I get a wave goodbye?
Yeah, you could do a wave.
Yeah, well, give me a wave.
You got it, but there it is.
What? Hey.
What do you think, man?
There you go.
Do you want to say something?
Swear and baby talk. Nope. Oh, wait. Go ahead. Swear and baby talk. Nobody will tell what it is.
Say
no.
Daddy'll know.
No.
Oh,
yeah.
I know. You want the cool headphones.
He
I'll
wants
give
the,
it all to you.
He wants the headphones. Look at that.
I don't know. We got another radio kid on our
Oh, yes. Radio mom, radio kid. It's the best. Now he wants his own chair. He's going to get in front of his own. You see that? He wants a set.
Here,
he
bud.
Wants his own set of headphones.
Here, bud. You want your headphones?
Look at that. Oh, my God,
oh, good,
folks.
Man. We got to post this.
You got to get. Oh, that's got to go on. Look at mom.
Got to
look at mommy.
Look
oh,
here,
that's going to go on the website, folks. Check it out.
Yeah, you're going to want to see the
WICC. Right here, Chase. Isn't this great? We're taking baby pictures on the radio.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he wants to talk on the microphone. Yes. Don't forget, you can still do this and go to law school.
Yeah, exactly.
And make
get a good scholarship.
Yeah. Oh, look at him.
There you
folks,
go.
He's in this big chair in front of the microphone. You want to see this? We're serious. Go to our website, WICC600.com, and our Facebook page, Jane. Facebook page, too. Go to our Facebook page in about 5 minutes or so. Oh, my God, this kid is. See, I wanted to start this way because it's cute and warm and fuzzy. All the things I'm not.
Oh, no, no, Paul.
No.
You just don't get to show that part on,
well,
on
yes,
radio. You know?
Yes.
You only have 4 hours.
Do you have any rich divorced friends in Fairfield County I could
rich
show that to?
Divorced friends.
No?
I'll work on that
okay.
for you.
Preferably kids already in college.
Wow, you are specific.
And a
dang.
Late. And a late.
I'm almost 30.
And,
I don't
well,
to, all my friends have kids 2 and under.
No, well, not that I don't love kids. Ryan?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he doesn't like that you don't want kids.
Oh, no. And a late model German sedan is good, too.
Wow, geez. All
yeah.
right.
So
do you want a Corvette with that or anything else you want? Maybe some avocado toast.
No, we don't do that. We had that discussion with Aaron about yuppie foods. Yes.
It's not yuppie. It's so tasty.
You know, Chase, you look pretty cool there. So, folks, once again, in about 5 minutes, once Melissa can post them, go to our Facebook page, WICC600.com. Our Facebook page, rather, not our webpage. Oh, he is just, he's into it now.
There you go, buddy. You got to keep it on your head.
He's into it now. There it is. Look at mommy. No,
nope.
He's taking the headphones off. He's already become like a temperamental star.
He's a little bit of a prima donna.
Who's easier to get along with, him or Tony?
Oh, Chase, obviously. Tony's fantastic, but you're talking about two babies.
But
in
he's
my
your
life.
Morning child.
I was going to say, he's my morning baby, and
yeah.
this is my afternoon baby.
There you go.
It's great.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They
chew on those headphones.
My life.
Yeah, grab the mic. There you go. He's got it all
and
down.
And Tony doesn't eat his headphones, so that's a good thing.
No, he stopped that a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The medication is working. The medication
Aww,
that Tony's on
Tony's great.
Is working. We all love Tony,
yeah.
especially when he's not here. But anyway, no, Tony, if you're listening, we love you, man. Tony and Melissa in the morning, Monday through Friday from 5 to 10. You can get their podcast, too, their show, of course, on our website and everywhere you get
he's
podcasts.
He's working in the studio, Paul. That means
at,
I got to get out of here.
WICC 600. Use that for your search terms. Well, Chase, it's been great to meet you.
Please now he's don't, using the microphone to spin his chair.
Please don't fall off the chair, okay?
This kid's a revolutionary.
Look at him. Look at him.
Say goodbye, Paul. Thank you so much.
Bye, Chase. Folks, they're oh, I got the wave. Hey, buddy. Okay, listen. Come on anytime. Anytime you want to talk politics, tolls, the state's budget deficit, why the mayor won't come on my show, all that stuff. Come on, why no Democrats will come on my show? I shouldn't say that. I've had one. So there you go.
No.
Yeah. Well, Chase, it's been real. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you. Hopefully I can last long enough to attend your wedding, your college graduation. I'm Italian. I bring envelopes. It just, you know, that's
he's
all.
He's digging it.
That's
he's
all
having
he,
a full that, conversation
now he
with
likes
right
now. Me. Now he's laughing. Yeah, Aaron just said I had him at envelope. There it is.
There it is.
Well, Melissa, well, you'll be with Tony. You'll be with your other child tomorrow morning.
Yes, of course. Okay. Every morning at 5 a.m.
All right, Tony, Melissa, folks, 5 to 10. This will be part of the show's podcast today, too.
Awesome.
Chase's
debut
on radio. All right.
You won't be judged here. Well, maybe a little. Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli. WICC 600.
And here we are, 2:32. It's 28 before 3 o'clock right here. Yeah, we judge sometimes, but it's all in good fun. At 203-333-9422, 333-9422. A few things politics for the next half an hour or so. Local politics. Brian Lockhart joins us from the Connecticut Post, Hearst Media. Brian, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, no problem. Well, the election cycle fully in gear now. Marilyn Moore, you think, Brian, will she qualify for a primary against Mayor Ganim?
So as of Monday, when I last spoke to her about this on Monday, she said that she had collected the 2,500 signatures that she would need and was hoping to get about 1,000 more because they're assuming that some of the signatures she has are going to be duds. So she doesn't want, they never want to get just, they always want to have a cushion.
Yeah, they always want to have a cushion because, I mean, you know, people are, I'll sign, and then you have to cross check them and the address doesn't exist and that one's got to be thrown away. So let's assume then, Brian, that we are going to have this primary coming up in Bridgeport. Remember a few years ago, primary, you know, Joe Ganim and Bill Finch, nobody gave Ganim a shot. We know what happens. What do you think happens this time?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, Moore is in many ways what Ganim was, obviously, 4 years ago.
Sure.
He is now the incumbent. She is the insurgent. Ganim was the one 4 years ago saying, listen, I can do this thing better.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, you know, you've had Bill Finch for 8 years. Your taxes are high. You've got problems with crime. I will fix this. Trust me, I will fix this. You know, there is definitely some dissatisfaction with Ganim.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, taxes are high. He had promised to hold the line on taxes, and one of the first things he did is he raised taxes when he came into office.
Yeah.
And also, he has a lot of, he's announced a lot of big development proposals that really haven't gotten off the ground. We do have the Bluefish Ballpark being turned into a concert amphitheater.
Yeah.
That has been delayed. It was supposed to open this year. It's not going to open until next year, but that does seem to be moving forward. But other stuff, downtown ice skating rinks, downtown renovation of the two downtown theaters, the casino that he was hoping to bring to town. You know, all that stuff is either is in limbo or maybe not even limbo anymore, maybe just dead. So I do think there is some dissatisfaction with him. That being said, Ganim really is an excellent campaigner.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone credits him with that, whether you like him or not. He just has this ability. He works very hard. He gets out there. He talks to people. He knocks on doors. And so one of the questions is, can Moore match him in that regard? Because even though she has been successful in terms of running for state senate, she's only had to appeal to a portion of the city, along with Monroe and Trumbull. Ganim is used to these citywide races.
Sure.
A citywide race is something that's new to Marilyn Moore. So that's what people are waiting to see. Can she reach out to enough voters, introduce herself successfully to enough voters, and also, frankly, make the case that there should be a change? Because for all the dire prophecies about Joe Ganim coming back, I mean, Bridgeport hasn't fallen into the sound.
No.
you know, and I mean, you could make an argument, you know, businesses are coming to town.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff, to be fair, got started before Joe Ganim was in office. But now that he is in office and he's been there for about 3.5 years, he can, if people are kind of feeling good, if people are saying, oh, you know, there's some new restaurants downtown, there's this oyster bar on Steel Point, there's the amphitheater coming. If people are feeling kind of good about that, they will probably give him the credit for it.
In the interest of full disclosure, Brian Lockhart once worked with my producer, Aaron Johnson. Now, Brian, I want to ask you, how was Aaron to work with before he became the calm, well-mannered millennial that I see on the other side of the glass directing this show through the turbulent waters of callers? He's my rock, you know, now. But he was probably a wild man when you first met him, right?
I hate to disappoint you. I got to say that my recollection of Aaron was always calm. really do. We hadn't talked in a while, but when I heard his voice, that was definitely one of the memories that I have of him. Is just,
well, because
calm,
you weren't
cool,
you weren't
calm, cool, collected guy.
You weren't one of the quarterbacks he laid out at Notre Dame of Fairfield when he was coming on a short side blitz. That's why, you know. Yeah, he wasn't standing over you going whoo like that. Anyway, back to matters political. You know, Brian, I was prepping for the show today, and I don't know whether you saw the story. The Indians said, "Well, no, thank you, Governor. We're not gonna give up our Trade Winds Casino for another place in Bridgeport or whatever." It is so unfair, I think, now, Brian, to the good people of this area and Bridgeport and the surrounding towns. They must feel like just a political and tribal and gubernatorial football here with this on and off and these numerous casino proposals. Yes, MGM. No, MGM. Only the Indian tribes. Yeah, but they won't build something as big to cannibalize on their eastern Connecticut properties. I think it's just to the point now where it's so unfair.
Well, and we just, actually, my colleague here, Dan Haar, just posted a story this afternoon where MGM has filed a federal lawsuit over the tribe's casino approval.
Breaking news. Okay.
Yeah, so they brought a lawsuit in. I'm just reading.
Yeah, what's the basis of the suit? Yeah, what are they charging?
Saying the Department of the Interior erred in the way it approved changes to the pacts between the state and the two tribes.
Hmm.
So to your point, I mean that actually emphasizes the point you're making about a political football because it just you're caught. Bridgeport and the state are kind of caught in the middle of this.
Yeah.
And these things can drag on for years.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately. I think particularly in Bridgeport, a lot of people feel frustration. They want something now. You know, they want something now. The jobs are needed now. They would like to have a casino now. Now, whether a casino is the best type of development for Bridgeport or for Connecticut is another debate entirely.
Well, yeah, and I say all the time, listen, Starfleet Academy is not coming to Bridgeport, okay? Manufacturing, you know, it's just, those jobs are gone. Yeah, you're right. Gambling is maybe, from a moral point of view, there is addiction, but can you name another industry, you know, short of an aerospace contractor that would drop 2,000-3,000 jobs in the area right away? I can't think of one.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And we had a caller that right before you came on with us. I don't know whether you heard him. He said, God, I wish this could get settled. It's time for us to get something here. We need to be. A gentleman called. He goes, I hate that Bridgeport is still in the minds of some people a butt of a joke. He said, why can't it be, hey, we're going to Bridgeport tonight to have a good time? It's a good point.
It is, but you know what? It is, to be fair, too, it is starting to change. I mean, there's a lot. When you really sit down and think about it, there is a lot mm-hmm. to see and do here in the city. And there's probably more here to see and do than there was, 10 years ago, 6 years ago. I mean, I rented here for a while, mm-hmm. For several years. And I mean, I think there's more in terms of restaurants downtown. The comedy club, I think, is a big attraction.
Absolutely.
So it is coming along. But to your point, yeah, there's a lot of people that really see the casino as
a beacon.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
You know, like, wow, look at this place that MGM supposedly, now people say, Brian, it's pie in the sky, but people saying, wow, they want to spend $700 million in Bridgeport. And I mean, if they ever did that, Brian, obviously, look, 95 is bad enough now. Can you imagine just for a minute what the off ramps would be like downtown, and not to mention they would have to put in, I would think, another ferry line or double up what they have now to the North Shore of Long Island, or coming up from New York. We know why then developer Donald Trump was hot on Bridgeport 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's something they're worried about with the amphitheater. Frankly,
really,
the city has been studying. They hired a consultant to study traffic issues in around the amphitheater because mm-hmm. that's a concern. They don't want people stuck in traffic trying to get to and from a concert for an hour because that's going to dissuade them from coming back, and it's going to be negative word of mouth. So they're trying to figure out what do we need to do to the local roads in order to make that entrance and the exit from those big shows as easy as possible so that people come back and they want to spend time in Bridgeport and they talk up Bridgeport as a positive place to go and spend an evening.
Brian Lockhart is the guest for a few more minutes from the Connecticut Post. We had a little bit of breaking news, as Brian just said a couple of minutes ago, another lawsuit filed, this time by MGM. But I got to tell you, Brian, the litigiousness, as you mentioned, but Connecticut in particular, our location wedged in the middle of everything between Bridgeport and Springfield and the casinos in Rhode Island, and now the stuff that's in Westchester County. I never thought, and I'm probably a little older than you, but I never thought, I mean, I grew up, it was Vegas, Atlantic City, and that's it. That was it. I mean, it was Vegas, Atlantic City, and your neighborhood bookie. And now, you wonder what the saturation point is going to be with all this,
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I think that's one of the questions that's obviously one of the questions that has that people have had about the Bridgeport Casino, because even if something was worked out with the tribes so that they do East Windsor and they do Bridgeport, you're now going to have four gaming mm-hmm. destinations in Connecticut, and there is a question of does the state need four gaming destinations, and what does that mean for the two original casinos up in the southeastern corner of the state? I know folks who go up there for concerts, who go up there to gamble, who go up there to dine, and if there's an option down here, yes, they will stay down here.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And that's a good thing for Bridgeport. But you got to imagine that those original two casinos are going to lose business, and they have already lost business from their prime.
Oh, the slots are down. You've seen the slot numbers, right? And it's not just a blip. I mean, one of the casinos, I don't remember which one out east, was they're down, I think, 12 or 13 months in a row, Brian. That's not a blip. That's a trend, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Further issues around here, the whole transportation thing. And now I had a couple of my sources up in the General Assembly text me last night and said, yeah, tolls probably dead. They may do a truck thing or maybe a bridge thing, maybe in the fall, and give it one more shot before they run away from it in election year. What are you hearing out there on this? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm hearing exactly the same thing. The challenge is that the state wants to and needs to maintain its transportation infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
But it is an expensive state. And I think that the toll opponents have successfully made a case, just based on the fact that nothing has been passed so far, and that the plan seems to be changing, the proposals seem to be changing. I think it's fair to say the opponents have successfully made a case that this would just be another expense on the backs of residents who are already living in an expensive state. And so you kind of have to figure out, they're going to have to figure out some way. I know the governor had talked about tax cuts, maybe some sort of sweeteners to try and balance out that expense. I will say this, and I'm happy to say this publicly. I think the problem, though, with the no tolls argument is that you are leaving a lot of money on the table. There's no, I drive up the shoreline quite often in the summer, and I'm stuck in traffic on 95, and every other license plate is an out-of-state plate. And they're all heading to the Cape, They're all heading to Massachusetts, or they're all heading to Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make an argument, well, if we had more things here in Connecticut for them to do, but we're never going to have the beaches that those summer destinations have.
No.
So there's always going to be a certain amount of people who drive through here to get there. And I think it is a valid question. Is there a way to try and capture that revenue? Is there a way to try and get these folks to invest in our infrastructure the way Connecticut residents have to invest in other states' infrastructure when we pay tolls in those other states? Mm. But I don't, what that answer is, I don't know.
That's a tough call. Hey, Brian, you've been covering this area for quite a long time now. And even in Connecticut, I'm in my upper 50s right now and spent practically my whole life here. And growing up, there was always a disconnect between the big cities, Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Danbury, Waterbury, and the suburbs. But I'm getting the impression, I think, anything racially, economically, transportation-wise, it seems to me that much the way we had that disconnect on the national scene, I'm kind of sensing it tougher than ever here statewise. What do you think of that?
You mean in terms of policy?
Well, yeah, policy, politics. Yeah, I mean, it seems that, the urban legislators have, X, Y, and Z priorities in Hartford, and the suburban legislators have their others, and it seems to be contributing to a lot of gridlock.
I think to a certain extent. I think the cities will always express frustration with the suburbs. They'll always feel that, the cities provide the hospitals, the cities provide the nonprofits, the cities take in more of the homeless, for example, more affordable housing. That's always another issue. We had a story about that, the lengths that the suburban towns will go to try and keep affordable housing out of their out of their borders. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that is an old fight. You know, is it improving? I don't know. I mean, a lot of it depends on the people at the top. I mean, Ned Lamont and before him, Governor Malloy, they certainly owed a lot to the city.
Yeah.
The cities were the ones that elected them. And so they are obligated to help the cities. They are obligated to help Bridgeport, and they are obligated to help Hartford, and they are obligated to help New Haven. And whether that's with financial aid, whether that's, trying to lure development here, they are certainly obligated to do that. I do think that there's a recognition, though, that in the legislature that the cities are very important and that you can't just ignore the cities because the state needs the cities. I mean, you need to attract new residents, you need to attract new businesses, and the cities are places, particularly a place like Bridgeport.
Yeah.
There's a lack of developable land in Fairfield County. Bridgeport has a lot of it. Has a lot of developable land. If people want to take advantage of it, it's just a matter of trying to figure out how to get them here.
Mm-hmm. One final thing I wanted to touch on with you. This situation, and we took a lot of calls on this, Brian, a few weeks ago, where this gentleman who got picked up by ICE, apparently he was the only major ICE pickup, quote-unquote, in the city, and now apparently he's in jail somewhere outside of Boston, some sort of immigration hold,
yep.
And it appears, I'm going to give everybody the benefit of the doubt here, but it appears that he was employed as a cook at a rather notable local restaurant, we'll leave it at that. It's sad in reading this story, Brian, and talking about it, and obviously you guys will have to cover it, where set aside what the feds did to get him, but now the guy is almost, it seems to be anyway, to me, from what I don't hear from people, a little radioactive here because of what he was doing and who employed him. And that's just, that just makes you shake your head.
The restaurant that you're talking about,
yeah.
In order to try and confirm that, I had to reach out to a lot
sure.
of people, and none of them wanted to be quoted.
Of course.
They were all, they all had to be anonymous sources.
Yeah.
And in part because I think they didn't want to embarrass that particular mm-hmm. politically connected restaurant. I'm wondering the same thing. I'm not sure, and it'll be interesting to see how this develops. Because the other thing you got to remember too is all we have to go on right now is what this guy's attorney is saying.
Yeah.
She's obviously painting a very positive picture of him. Had no criminal record. Worked at this restaurant for 15 years. Single dad. Good member of the community. That's all. That's everything she has presented about this guy. I have not heard anything to contradict that.
Yeah.
And I would assume that I would. A coworker, somebody would say, well, that's really not true. So take her at her word for that. Some politicians have stepped forward. State Rep. Chris Rosario has been pretty vocal.
Oh, I know that.
This.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you're right. You would think that this guy would have some friends in high places, but it's kind of worked against him. I think because of where he worked, it is kind of a sensitive issue, and it's going to be interesting to see because obviously he's got a bond hearing coming up. And if he's later this month, and then if he is released and he returns here to Bridgeport, then the next stage is going to begin in which they're going to have to make a case yeah. for him to be allowed to stay here. And
how does he pay? Yeah, and he comes back. How does he feed his daughter?
Right. And, and so it'll be, to your point, I think that test is coming up. I think it'll be, if he is released and he does come back here, we'll obviously be trying to write about that. And it'll be interesting to see how he is greeted upon his return. And frankly, do some of the people who are silent now, will they vouch for him when it comes time for his attorney to make the case that he should be allowed to stay in the United States? Because you've seen it. I mean, there have been stories in other cities
yeah.
where Senator Blumenthal, Chris Murphy, these folks come out
yeah.
and they publicly lobby. They lobby the courts for these folks to go gently on these folks. And so it'll be interesting to see if that in fact happens and if you see some of Bridgeport's politicians.
Yeah, step up. Absolutely. Hey, Brian, it's been great. Hope to talk to you again. Brian Lockhart, folks, read him online in print in the Connecticut Post. Thanks, Brian. Talk to you later.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go. Well, there you go. He's right. will any of the alleged people who employed and or worked side by side with this gentleman come forward? And just about everybody anywhere is talking about the two mass shootings, the documented mass shootings over this past weekend. We also had a third one the weekend before at a garlic festival outside the Bay Area of California. We're hearing a little bit about that California shooting, but more about the Dayton, Ohio shooting and the El Paso shooting. But there are concerns, at least by some on the right, and even some in media organizations that are saying, you know, hey, listen, the El Paso shooting, because of a perceived racist element to it, is getting far too much coverage or an imbalance in coverage versus what went on in Dayton, Ohio. And to talk about that, the managing editor of newsbusters.org, Chris Houck, joins us. Chris, Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you today?
Hey, good. Yeah, Curtis.
Oh, Curtis, I'm sorry. I can't even read my own handwriting sometimes. Not enough coffee. Not enough coffee, Curtis. You know what it is. Hey, Curtis, listen. Is it any wonder, and I kind of noticed this almost from the get-go, that the coverage of the gunman in El Paso versus the psycho there in Dayton was slanted one way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely think so. I mean, last night you had CBS and NBC refusing to acknowledge what the FBI said yesterday, that they have uncovered evidence that the Dayton shooter was interested in violent ideologies. Even though that might not point to motive, it's still something worth looking at. And they still hadn't reported on that at all. And I think that's really disturbing. But the admission from the special agent in charge there from the FBI was not really a surprise for a lot of us that had seen that this individual had been, you know, supporting. He'd even liked or retweeted things related to the El Paso shooting and the need for gun control. And yet this guy, hours later, decides he wants to be a mass murderer.
Yeah, I mean, he was in, let's see, if you look at the stuff here, I have it in front of me in his tweets, he supported Antifa using violence against quote-unquote white supremacists and right-wingers, even calling the Antifa terrorist who attacked an ICE facility in Washington a martyr. On Charlottesville, he allegedly tweeted, "Kill every fascist." Photos also show him with a satanic tattoo. I'm sorry.
And then I will add that, he was his ex-girlfriend talked to CNN yesterday, and now these she described these things as yellow flags. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Having suicidal thoughts, putting a gun in his mouth, and on their first date, he thought it would be cool to whip out a video of a mass shooting for her to watch.
Jeez.
She thought they were only yellow flags instead of red flags.
Unbelievable. So on their first date, he said, instead of like going to a nice romantic movie and taking a walk on the beach and having a nice dinner, he apparently said, watch the video of these shootings.
Yeah, of a mass shooting. I don't know. She didn't say which, but just of a mass shooting. Yeah.
And here's the other thing. We're talking to Curtis Houck, managing editor of newsbusters.org. Curtis, apparently this guy, this Dayton guy that we're not hearing a whole lot about, you know, this kid had a kill and a rape list in high school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he got in trouble with the school, and I'm not sure if he was either suspended or kicked out of the school, but yeah, that was addressed as well. But what did law enforcement know about this? We don't know. You would think that they hopefully would have, but again, this is a situation, folks. Again, regardless of how you feel about guns, it is see something or hear something, say something, like, for real. And the problem is, unfortunately, we don't, you know, for newspapers and broadcast networks, you don't hear about FOIA plots, either because law enforcement doesn't share it, they don't need to share it, or B, that they don't, because people aren't dead if there's no blood on the ground in the air, people aren't going to, the news media isn't as interested, that there are foiled plots. Like in Texas, that I believe it was a mother or grandmother or something called the police on another young man who wanted to go do something heinous like that, carry out an attack. But again, these stories don't get a lot of attention, that when people do the right thing that stop this from these sorts of things from happening. And yet we're the only time we're here talking about those things is when someone actually is able to go through with their twisted dreams or something.
Curtis Hauge is the managing editor of newsbusters.org. They keep an eye on what the networks are reporting, what they're not reporting. And also, Curtis, I know you folks for years, because I've talked to a lot of you folks here at the MRC and Newsbusters, you also keep tabs on the amount of time devoted. Now, nobody's, you know, keeping score here. It's got to be 50-50. But a lot of times you folks point out when there's just an obvious bias in the way things are covered one side or the other. So you keep actually aggregate time totals of how this stuff is covered.
Yeah, we're looking at, as of yesterday, when we were looking at some of the coverage, we were up to 77 minutes, which is pretty crazy so far. But before that, yesterday, before last night's newscast, through yesterday morning, there had been 77 minutes and there had been nothing about the Dayton shooters' views, personal views about all sorts of things.
So you're saying that you guys, you know, obviously you record this, you sit down with a stopwatch, I know what you guys do. So you're saying there have been, now folks are talking about the network newscast, because they are still yeah. there, and people, you know, Curtis, people still watch them, even in the age of cable news, right? They still
I should add, the CBS Evening News and CBS This Morning, both are in distant third place out of compared to ABC's shows and NBC shows. They still pull in millions of viewers, which is way more than even every single MSNBC show, every single CNN show, and all but a couple of shows on Fox.
Yeah, yeah. So although they seem to be kind of dinosaurs among the media elite, Curtis, they still have, 20 to 30 million people watching them every day. So you're saying that as far as your total, about 77 minutes was devoted to the background through yesterday morning of the El Paso shooter versus, actually zero on Dayton?
No, I'm saying it was combined between Dayton and El Paso, but there had been 0 seconds talked about what the Dayton shooter's views about things were, other than that he was a guy who was there with his sister and companion, boyfriend, something or other of the sister.
Do you confront the networks with these numbers from time to time? Do you ever call them and say, hey, by the way, we were just kind of watching here. Do you? And what is their response when you do that?
Well, I mean, sometimes we have our MRC action with our supporters, encourage them to call the networks in certain instances that we have in the past. And it does make a difference when we do. And when we tweet about the stories, we make sure to include the networks' shows and, if there's a particular host or journalist involved.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do get responses. I mean, we have a little bit more interaction with people on cable. And it is pretty mixed. I mean, I would say more often than not, you'll find people who are ultra-sensitive, journalists are, which is really interesting because their entire profession, especially when it comes to television, is shoving microphones in people's faces. But when you confront them with criticism or just inquiries, they get really defensive, they get really intense, they get really angry with you. But then there are some people, I will say, that I've interacted with who don't take it personally. And they appreciate with Newsbusters that how we provide full transcripts of a lot of these segments and questions. So if they may disagree with our spin, we transcribe the 3, 4, 5 minute segments that are at the bottom of the story that people can read for themselves.
Curtis, well, I kind of want to dovetail off of something here that I'm sure you saw yesterday, the last couple of days, where the New York Times had to redo a headline because apparently the Twitterverse just went apoplectic over the fact that the New York Times actually, I thought, posted a fair, down-the-middle, five-word assessment of what the president said in his remarks after the shooting, the initial ones. What'd you think of that?
It's truly unbelievable, and the fact that you had so many liberals on Twitter talk about canceling their subscription to the New York Times because they didn't like this one headline, it's just such a total snowflake move. Welcome to the world of conservatives here, where we see this on a daily basis. They're promoting basic facts. It was original for those that hadn't seen it. The original headline for their first edition was "Trump urges unity versus racism."
Which is a straight-ahead kind of, here's what he said. No commentary there. Here's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. enough people complained, and then for their later editions, they wrote this, quote, "Assailing hate, but not guns."
Well,
and then everyone was happy. And everybody was gone.
And then everybody was able to go home. And look, Curtis, we're not making light of this. Here was a tragedy, but again, it's frightening to me. And I said this earlier in my show today and even yesterday. It's frightening to me that whatever you think of the New York Times, they still are America's, you know, paper of record. People that you and I probably know in the print business, right? God, I would love to work for the New York Times. That would be considered a career-topping moment, right? But you have that paper of that kind of a statue, like, for all intents and purposes, not having a spine. And that's right. Frightening to me, Curtis. That's to me, that's really frightening about what social media can do.
Exactly. I mean, it's something that's not talked about enough. You know, you'll have the supposed media-type reporters at places like CNN defend the move or just kind of present it as just a thing that happened instead of make a point about how ridiculous this was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our boss Brent Brazell went on Fox Business yesterday, and yeah, I made the point that this is the sort of thing what people are furious about, you know, and they're only making it worse.
Absolutely. Listen, Curtis,
they don't understand it. It's the hypocrisy. This sort of nonsense is why Donald Trump was elected.
Well,
I mean, a lot of people
precisely.
Say this is how we got Trump, but it's the truth.
No, precisely. And even, you know, and my producer on the other side of the glass is kind of nodding approvingly because exactly, even Curtis, even people who despise the man, and I understand he's a 50-50 guy, but it's mind-boggling to me anyway, that people who despise the man, who want to get rid of him, don't understand that some of the things they do elected him in the first place and may elect him again. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is mind-boggling that, you know, do these people even think about how they're perceived, what this looks like? You know, how much of a temper tantrum or a meltdown this was?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a little kid in the grocery store, like having a meltdown, rolling on the floor sort of thing. And people just kind of walk by and they're like,
okay, whatever.
Okay, yeah, whatever's up with you.
Whatever, it's a little kid, he wants his ice cream and mom won't give it to him. Curtis Houck, managing editor, newsbusters.org. Check out the Media Research Center and in particular newsbusters.org. Folks, you know, don't say, well, they're just a bunch of conservatives there. No, they analyze how stories are covered, and I think people from both sides of the aisle should definitely check them out. Curtis, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
No problem, anytime.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go. The Media Research Center, newsbusters.org. What do you say? As of yesterday morning or this morning, what, 77 minutes on all the network news shows? Now, understand, that's CBS Evening News, ABC's World News Tonight, NBC Nightly News, and then the morning shows. CBS This Morning, the Today Show, and Good Morning America, GMA. So combined 77 minutes coverage on the motivation of the shooter in El Paso versus, you know, virtually zero coverage of the motivation and the shooter in Dayton, Ohio. When, in fact, you know, I'll give credit to some of the media outlets. As soon as the Dayton, Ohio thing happened, I saw some outlets putting stuff out, the cops had found out about this guy. This guy, the guy in Ohio, seemed to be a far leftist. Now, look, I understand something. Death is death. People die. Conservatives kill people. Racists kill people. Leftists kill people. Communists kill people. But all you're looking for in this situation, right, all you're pining for is even fair coverage. All you're pining for is fair coverage. Now, I guarantee you, now I may be wrong, I shouldn't guarantee, then maybe I shouldn't do that, but I wonder what the balance is going to be on the nightly news, or the nightly news broadcast tonight and tomorrow, of, you know, are they going to interview anybody who was happy the president showed up in El Paso? Maybe they are. Hope they are. I heard some of that in our radio coverage today, which is good. But man, I got to tell you, this is, and yet, folks, I checked a couple of online polls last night, and even after this, the president was still in the mid to upper 40s of approval rating. So despite all of this happening, his supporters, whether you detest the guy, whether you want to toss him out with the garbage, or you love the guy and you have a picture of him like Italians used to have the Pope and Frank Sinatra in their house? Maybe you have a picture of the president right above your little dinner nook. But whether you despise the guy or love him, his base is pretty much not going anywhere. And all this is going to take for him to get reelected is his base, plus shifting about 4 or 5% of the electorate. So grab some popcorn, grab some munchies for the next, 16 months.